It feels good, man. It feels good, right? Yo, yo. I'm in the light at the end of the tunnel. Hello and welcome back to Small Market Bias. My name is Matthew Tynan, and joining me today is a man whose city, Sacramento, is receiving a new baseball team, at least for a short period of time. That is one Trevor Zitgraff. Trevor is the city of Sacramento, home of the Sacramento Kings, and soon to be the unnamed, non-affiliated Athletics.
Yeah, we can't be the Sacramento A's, right? Like, I feel like they should figure out what they're going to call the Las Vegas team, and Sacramento should get that Vegas team name. Otherwise, I feel like the Sacramento A's, I don't think it has a good ring to it. And second of all, I just feel like there's too many bad feelings between A's fans and A's ownership for that to go over super duper well.
How many A's fans do you think are going to make the trip from Oakland to Sacramento whenever they move next season? I mean, and they'll be there for maybe apparently 2 to 4 years, depending on when their stadium's going to be ready in Vegas, which could be 2029. Like, that, this whole thing is just a freaking mess.
It's a good question. I mean, there's a decent amount of A's fans in Sacramento already because it's only 60 miles or something like that. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Hour 15 drive, depending on traffic. But yeah, I imagine the mass majority of A's fans that do come to Sacramento for games are going to be to protest and wear their sell shirts. There's a group that sells these shirts that in A's colors just have sell, S-E-L-L.
Oh, okay.
And that's kind of like, that's a way to protest this terrible ownership group.
The Oakland A's are basically a AAA baseball team, and they're going to be now playing in a AAA stadium, which apparently has like one shared batting cage, bullpens without bathrooms. They don't have family rooms in the building. It's a minor league ballpark. Like, these are not up to standard of Major League Baseball stadiums. So of course it's going to be like that, but it still might be a fun environment to attend. Like, are you going to take your son Rory to a game? If you do, are you going to wear a sell t-shirt in solidarity with A's fans who might be there protesting?
Yeah, we'll go. We'll do family outings. I'm curious what ticket prices will look like because of the AAA team that plays here, the Rivercats, which is the Giants AAA affiliate. Those tickets are pretty reasonable. So I wonder... And A's tickets were even more reasonable these last few years. So I guess I'd be curious to see what those ticket prices look like. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Vivek Ranadive, who owns the Kings, owns the Rivercats. And so I believe also owns the stadium now. And
that minor league stadium?
Yeah, it'll be curious to see if there's like a pop-up practice facility, but like training facility that pops up like right by the stadium, or just something they're gonna have to do because they are not major league accommodations here. Like, this has been a AAA town for as long as they've had the Rivercats, which I think is coming up on 25 years. So I don't know. It's gonna be probably what it'll be. It'll be messy for the first year or two, and then the second year or two, it'll really start to feel like a thing, and then they'll leave.
Yeah. With that in mind, like, billionaire sports team owners famously love to spend their own money on things that might not earn them anything.
Right. Right.
But speaking of Vegas, and before we get to the show, which, by the way, is going to include a little discussion about obviously the injuries to Devin Vassell and Jeremy Sochan. We're going to talk about sort of the Spurs' recent run of form. They've been playing well for a while now. Guys who have, the last couple of games have had to elevate roles. Victor Wembanyama has even seen his role elevate a little bit. He's kind of running the show a bit more. But first, we must get to the ad read. It's down to the last four teams. BetOnline has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long. And now that we're almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. MLB is here, and NBA, NHL playoffs are around the corner, As always, BetOnline is the number one source for your summer sports wagering. Head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action and remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And Trevor, are you, look, there are probably like five or six NBA prospects that are going to be playing in this Final Four between Purdue, UConn, NC State, and Alabama. Five or six, maybe even a little bit more, but like the primary guys are Stephon Castle, Donovan Clingan, both expected to go well inside the top 10, I would say. And then, of course, Zach Edey, whose range is anywhere from late lottery to late first round. I mean, I think it just kind of depends on who you ask with that guy. Are you someone who watches watches college basketball for the college basketball, or are you someone who is going to be watching the Final Four for the just to be able to watch a little bit more of these prospects?
The second thing, I would say, I generally speaking do not watch college basketball for the sake of the college basketball at all, but there are definitely teams that I do enjoy watching. UConn under the Stan Hurley regime has been they've been fun. Villanova, I tend to just always enjoy their style of play. But like then there's teams like Virginia who like still run like a zone and like
they want to play games in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, and like literally it's like passes around, you know, four passes before you could take a shot, which I don't think is actually the rule, but that's just what it feels like. Can't do that. I feel like maybe just because I'm out here in California, the soon to be not Pac-12 was always fun to watch. I feel like that was at least a little bit more up and down.
Well, you've always watched Arizona.
Yep.
For some reason, like you're all over the Arizona guys.
I'll tell you why. The reason. So Sean Elliott was my first favorite NBA player. So there was that Arizona connection. And then I think when I really started paying attention to college basketball was when Arizona made that run in 97, and they knocked off three number one seeds to do it. And it was just, there was Mike Bibby, Miles Simon.
Yeah.
Michael Dickerson, I believe, was on that team as well. Like that was a fun team for me to watch. Yeah. So at that point, I was just like, oh, this is my team moving forward. And then
that's kind of funny. You and I are basically the same age, but yeah, I remember like some of my earlier memories of college basketball featured that Arizona team. They were fun. I remember it to this day. Yeah.
Like I remember, you know, the Fab Five and everything like that, but I just feel like I was too young to totally get it. And UNLV, the Larry Johnson,
too young.
The running rebel. I was just too young to like really get it. And so, yeah. So it's been, I just stuck with them, and they've always had NBA guys. So that's always helped keep my interest in them. And they've always been good to very good. But then always fall short. Like it's just
right. And what's his name? Sean Miller. Mm-hmm. Is he still the coach? Because
he was an assistant. His name's Tommy. I'm blanking on his name.
I don't even care about who it was because I remember now that Sean Miller left. Yeah. What, like a year ago, 2 years ago? I mean, it's been
two or three years ago. That's Tommy Lloyd from Gonzaga is there.
Tommy Lloyd. Okay. Well, I think one of the things about Arizona, even under Sean Miller, is like when I first, because you were always back in the day with 48 Minutes of Hell, like you were the guy who always did the draft stuff. The Spurs were always picking really late in the draft. I don't think draft coverage was like nearly as extensive as it is now. We have so much more access to stuff. So it's really been like the last few years that I've actually started getting into the draft in Arizona. Is this team that at least in recent years kind of reminded me a little bit of, at least their sort of core principles offensively, like reminded me of some of the stuff that San Antonio wants to do. So I kind of watched their players through that lens, and I think that kind of hit me a couple of years ago that it just reminded me of sort of a similar style. So I was looking at dudes like, you know, Benedict Mathurin a couple of years ago through that lens. But anyway, we've been on this tangent. What do you think of the guys that are coming up in the Final Four in terms of prospects? Because obviously we're approaching that time, or a couple of months away. But the next, not, it's not even a couple of months. What, April, May, June? Well, no, I guess it is a little bit more than 2 months or so. So we're going to be getting into a lot more draft discussion. So what do you think of dudes like Stephon Castle, as I said, Zach Edey, and then Donovan Klingon, like these guys that are going to be names that are going to be coming up a lot over the next couple of months?
So real quick, I mean, Klingon is obviously in the Walker Kessler, Steven Adams mold of player. So that's obviously a guy that, you know, even if he has a very specific role and there's not a lot of flexibility to what you can do there, like he's an effective player. And I think Zach Edey probably won't be as effective as Klingon is, especially on defense. But like, I would take him, especially in this draft, I would take him before like 20. I would take him late lottery because he can do stuff. And I think I saw a comp to like Ivica Zubac for him.
Okay.
And like, I think about Oklahoma City, who wouldn't need to rely on him, but like could totally play him, especially if it's just like 20 minutes a game, change of pace to what they do. Memphis likes to have a big guy next to Jaren Jackson Jr. And Jaren Jackson Jr. is quick enough that he could, you know, make up for some of the slowness that Edey has. So I think, but the guy I really like is Stephon Castle, because he's, to me, he's Derek White without a jumper, which he could still develop a jumper, but he does like all of those little things that we all enjoyed that Derek did. And, you know, does that mean that he's ever going to be like a primary number one option? No, but he's going to be like the ultimate role player who you want next to a guy like Victor Wembanyama, because he's going to just fill a bunch of spots and fill a bunch of gaps and guard 1 through 3 at least. And I do think that this team, the Spurs, need, and I know we're going to get to this a little bit more later, I think they still, as good as their defense has been, especially with Wemby obviously, but then also Sohan back there, another perimeter guy who is just like absolute lockdown defender, is still, I think, a thing that they will need moving forward.
Oh, they for sure need, they need basically everything, but in varying degrees, obviously, but like they need anything that they can get. But perimeter defense is a huge one. People keep like referring to Victor Wembanyama's presence almost in this form of like a crutch. It's a big point of debate whenever, just like, for instance, when people talk about the Trae Young trade potential, that kind of thing, like, oh, we got Wemby back there, we're not going to have to worry about, you know, if a guy like Trae Young gets beaten. Well, no, you don't want to use him as a crutch. You want to use him as like the foundation of a defense.
Right.
But he needs guys on the perimeter,
right,
to defend. And a guy like Stephon Castle, big dude. I don't know exactly what his length is, but I don't think he's like crazy long, but I think he's got fine length.
Yeah, the Ringer's got him at 6'6 with a 6'8 wingspan, which is so similar. What's that? That's probably about Devin size. Like,
yeah, maybe not quite, but close, probably. Yeah. But he's a big dude. Like, he looks like he's already got a little bit more, maybe not this version of Devin, like 2024 Devin, but 2020 Devin.
Yeah,
when he came into the draft, he looks bigger. He's a smooth athlete, not like crazy explosive, but a smooth athlete who can get to the rim. He can get physical with people. The only thing, like when you watch him, he's a good playmaker. Like you said, he's probably not going to be the primary. Like, he's probably not going to be head of the snake type of player facilitator, but he is a good all-around basketball player who's really just lacking a consistent jumper. But like I watch him shoot the ball and it doesn't look bad. His free throw numbers, his free throw percentages have come up, I believe, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in the mid-70s now. So
okay.
That's workable.
That's workable. That's okay. And you see him get hot from three every once in a while. He's also like this late riser because he was out with a meniscus injury to start the season, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So like, we've seen this guy really climb up a lot of boards when you look around, and especially here in the last couple of weeks, it feels like his stock has been jumping like crazy.
Yep. Everyone needs wings who can play D.
It's true. You know, you brought up Walker Kessler with Klingon, and then when you look at Edie and you think about, like, when you watch him play defense, you're like, man, this guy's going to get killed on defense. He's just too slow, too plodding.
Right.
But I remember just saying the same thing about Walker Kessler a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And him coming in and just being, or I'm sorry, what, two summers ago now?
Two summers ago, yeah.
And him coming in and just, like, really looking like a different person athletically.
Right.
Not some crazy difference, but a lot of times you don't need this, like, massive jump in athleticism, quickness, you know, foot speed, things like that. You just need a modicum of it.
Right.
To really improve your ability, because so much of this stuff is just like you're a fraction of a second late. Mm-hmm. And you're beaten. And with a guy like Edie, who they say is 7'4", I haven't seen like the official measurements or anything like that, but he's just so big and long. And you talk about, like, everyone sort of needs a guy like that, who, by the way, is skilled. Like, mm-hmm. Yes, he's really tall, but when he puts up the shots in those big tall guy spots, he hits them. He's a decent free throw shooter. Like, I don't know. But first of all, I want to just real quick, like with the draft, I am mostly, when I look at it from a Spurs perspective, I'm mostly putting guys like Klingon and Saar and Edie sort of off to the side.
Yeah,
because
same.
I just don't think you're in a draft that's so full of, like, that's lacking star power, yet is so full of these role type guys. I think there's a real, at least not, you know, sliding or moving the slider over a little bit in terms of drafting for fit rather mm-hmm. than just straight up best talent available, because, like, the talent pool is a little bit flat. But
right.
You have your guy in Wembanyama. I just feel like at this point, if you're looking at another big, you're wasting a spot right now that's going to be really important. I mean, like, the Spurs are still making up for, like, the fact that Josh Primo's not on their roster anymore.
Right.
Like, they need to sort of fill that vacancy even. So anyway, I think the big dudes are interesting and, like, will obviously be important for other teams. By the way, other teams that are going to be looking down the road and saying, hey, we need dudes who can defend Victor Wembanyama. Yeah. But I just don't think it's in the cards for the Spurs.
I agree. I think if you told me that Alex Saar could confidently tell me that he could space, I would be like, well, maybe, because he could. You know, he's so fluid and so athletic. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, there's just guys that I'm like, why would they take, if Wemby is nominally their starting five, why would they take Donovan Klingon, who has no roster flexibility, no positional flexibility
no.
whatsoever? Like, why would you?
No.
I mean, I understand the talent, but they kind of already have, I mean, they have a rim protector. They got a pretty good rim protector already.
Yeah, and I mean, the reason they paid someone like Zach Collins is because he could hit threes.
Right.
And he's kind of back to hitting threes, but last year, right, he was hitting threes on volume.
Right.
Klingon doesn't shoot, and he shoots like 50% from the free throw line. Like,
yeah, it's bad.
Not a good shooter. Saar is like, you
60,
can see.
I think.
Yeah, like 60% from the line. I think it's increased a little bit, maybe even closer to 70, but he's like a 30% three-point shooter.
Yeah.
He shoots them. And it doesn't look like terrible, but like, how much confidence do you have that that's going to be something that he'll be able to add? And by the way, how long is it going to be able to take him to add something like that?
Right.
He's a pretty underdeveloped offensive player just in general. Again, not saying he couldn't like get there, but like, he sort of projects to be a multi-year project in a lot of people's eyes, at least. So I don't know why. If you're looking at the Final Four and someone to watch, check out Stephon Castle. It's worth it. And a guy who, like, that dude could go anywhere from what, top three to back of the top 10, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably a good range for him.
Yeah. So it's just going to be such a weird draft. I really don't know what to make of it yet, but we'll get there, man. We'll get there. Let's get back to the Spurs, not potential future Spurs. Right. But okay, we already know Devin Vassell out for the season. Stress reaction to the third metatarsal head, and I can't remember which foot. I think it's the right foot. Jeremy Sochan out for the season. Arthroscopic surgery to go in and repair a left ankle impingement that had been bothering him for a couple of weeks. And apparently Devin had been bothered by the stress reaction in his toe. I guess third metatarsal, I guess, would be the middle toe. I believe.
That makes sense.
But in their stead, the Spurs have been playing pretty damn well. They're a little bit more. You can see it sort of at the beginning of these games, especially the last couple of games without Sochan and Vassell in there. Teams aren't really able to home in on Victor, obviously, but the Spurs are kind of doing the old Spurs thing, hitting them from a bunch of different angles and sort of operating out of that one focal point in Victor Wembanyama, who, at least to my eyes, over the last couple of games, and especially the game in Denver the other night, didn't have a good shooting night, 9-for-29 from the floor. I don't even care about that. At this point, you really care about the process over the results. Yep. And Victor looks right now more than he has all season. It looks like the game has slowed down significantly for him, to where he's being intentional with his decisions on offense. He's still coughing it up a little bit. He only had 2 turnovers in Denver, but he looked more measured, looked more even keeled. And again, process over results. This version of Victor, who's taking the time to process everything that's happening around him and keeping his team in the game on the other side of the floor, even as he's having a poor shooting night, like, that's cool stuff to see, man. I almost felt like it was going to be boring to watch the Spurs without Vassell and Sochan, because of course, like, that would just be a logical, it would be logical to arrive at that conclusion, but it hasn't been. Like, it's been really enjoyable to watch this team. They're playing some of the best basketball of the season right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think the other thing I'd note about Victor is New York and Golden State games, he went to the free throw line. He had 12 attempts and 10 attempts. And, you know, you'd have to go back to, there was a game against Memphis where he had 10, but, like, he does not get to the line. I would say getting to the free throw line is a needs to improve area for him. And
he's been getting there more.
But he's been getting there more and more. And you could tell, and I think to your point, like, just the game slowing down, him kind of understanding where the mismatches are and how to get into these positions. And then obviously the team also understanding we need to get him the ball, which they've talked about all season long. It's been a process about understanding when and where to get him the ball to kind of maximize these advantages. It's been encouraging. You know, somebody I was going to ask you about, Matt, was I think Malachi Branham has been, I mean, he's been up and down all season, but, like, we hadn't talked in a little bit, but there was a stretch at the beginning of March, 18 points, 20 points, 23 points, 20 points, and, like, 50%, over 50% shooting.
Yeah,
over
he was
that
going
stretch.
Crazy.
He was kind of, and then he slumped, and he even, you know, against that win in Phoenix, he only played 7 minutes. But then he bounced back from that, 17 points, 10 points, 12 points, 24 points in the Denver loss. He had 24 points. So that's been really encouraging. I was going to ask you what you thought of Julian Champagny's play, because I think long-term this is his role. He's a 3-and-D guy. Like, that's what his role is going to be, whether it's off the bench or in the starting unit. But there was, like, there's some pump and go. Like, he's not afraid to attack the basket. And I was just wondering, because you're at these games, is that something that anyone's talked about him doing more of? Have you noticed that he's just like a little bit more confident with the ball in his hands?
Dude, I'm just waiting for him to land one of those like monster dunks.
Yeah.
He's tried like 10 of them this year and has not been able to get one. The one against Denver the other night, he had the open lane. He just took off like a foot or two too early. Yeah. But no, other than that, I was wondering if you noticed this. You bring up the pump and go, which I don't think he's traveled in that situation for several games now. I'd have to go back and look, but one of the things that was just killing him is when a defender closed out and he attacked the closeout, he was traveling like once a game for a long stretch there in that exact, you know, motion. But he hasn't done that for a while. And then I started noticing, especially since now that first Devin being out and then last game, Jetty Osman being out, because he was another sort of, you know, connector type, like, right, you know, secondary ball handling type. Did you notice that they like they ran Julian out of a couple of pick and rolls? Like there were like in the second half, he ran like handling the ball, like three or four pick and rolls as the ball handler. Did you notice that?
So there was, I can't remember which game it was, but yes, because I was like, I think it was whatever the first game Devin was out, because I was probably doing other stuff while I had the game on. So like I'd look up and I'd notice somebody, you know, from side action pick and roll. And I would be like, I would just assume it was Devin.
Julian?
And then I looked closer. I was like, oh damn. And then I looked at, you know, like I go to my phone and I'm like, or I see Devin in his awful street clothes and I just go, and I was just like, oh, wait. Oh, that was Julian Champagne. How about that? Because, yeah, like and I don't know if that's, I guess part of me wonders if that's like, if that's the coaching staff saying like, all right, we got 2 weeks here. We know Devin's out. Other guys are going to be in and out. Let's see what you can do, or if that's more, because I know they don't call like a ton of plays. It's just like they just want to keep the ball moving.
Right.
I can't remember which broadcast I was listening to, but they were saying that Pop said basically like, I think it was the Warriors game, because that was NBA TV, and you know, they asked Pop about it, and Pop was like, we're not like trying to call a ton of plays right now, but if we do call a play, it's to make sure we get Victor involved in the game. And so I wonder if that's just them calling something out for Julian, or them saying like, hey man, like if you end up getting the ball in that situation, like don't feel like you just have to shoot it or pass it, like you could do a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of the latter. And with Julian, with a number of these guys, and by the way, after the break we're gonna play a game. Trevor Zitgraf has been given the task of being the GM of the Spurs, and I'm going to be his assistant and help him weigh the pros and cons of his decisions. But should be fun. We'll get to that in a second. But speaking of, this front office is still evaluating some of these guys, and you know, at this point, they obviously have a really good feeling of what they have in turn, you know, a grasp on what they have. But like Julian is a guy that you want to see play for the rest of the season. Right. You don't want to waste any games on him.
Right
there, you know, all season long when we've talked, I've written about it, whether it's been on online or whatever, but like Julian Champagne has gotten a whole lot of hate this year, and I get it. I get that he is far from like the sexiest basketball player on this team, but like every night you look at the box score and he has one of the higher plus minuses on the team, because he defends. He doesn't make too many mistakes, and especially the nights where his shot is going down, like he makes a huge difference. And to me, like the thing that's missing, and it's cool to see all the development and the evolution of the stuff off the dribble, but at the end of the day, it's going to be about his jump shot. Like if he really maintains a consistent stroke from the outside, consistent mechanics, consistent footwork, all of those things that like you see it in spurts. He has a good base for a shot, but it just, it's been inconsistent. If that thing gets consistent and stays consistent, like, he's going to be a legit NBA player for a long time.
Yeah. And Ian's funny. Because I think either people just think he doesn't have, I don't know, a ton of sauce to his game, or he's just boring.
Well,
or whatever,
he doesn't.
It just reminds me of Spurs era Michael Finley, who at that point was past the point of like being like, I got this Michael Finley. Like, he understood exactly what his role was. He reminds me of, not as good as the defender, but he reminds me of Bruce Bowen. Like, these are just guys that they absolutely needed around.
Go down the line, Ime Udoka, even like freaking Keith Bogans.
Yeah, I think,
you know, like that, you know, that proto, that archetype. Right.
Brent Berry was more a secondary ball handler.
Yeah.
But same thing. Like, I think Brent Berry knew his primary responsibility was to be a spacer when they needed him to be. And so that's like, you're right. We're coming up. We're going to do the GM thing. And he's a guy that, like, I don't completely know what to do with, because he's, I don't know. I'm probably more interested in him than I should be, just because I think, like, I don't know. Like, they're at a point now where I feel like they need to start putting together an actual roster that fits with each other. And, like, to me, like, we're getting past the experimentation, and like, they should start being like, all right, we want Julian to be whatever they want him to be, but like some sort of role player and everything like that. So, yeah, he's just someone where every time I think I just kind of shoulder shrug at him. And he does some stuff like, you know, this might just be the exact type of guy they need moving forward.
Yeah, he has, you know, like the other night when he missed that dunk and he got the ball back, had a shot, he had a crack to shoot a three in the corner, right. Pump faked, kind of drove, turned, was going to throw it to Victor, and then threw it out of bounds. It's like,
yes.
It's like those sequences, those awful sequences that stick out in people's minds. And it's like, yeah, he's not helping himself with the right. fan base on that one.
And he had a really good summer league. And I remember,
he was scorching.
Yeah.
Scorching.
And I remember the Sacramento summer league we went to, like, he was doing a lot of stuff on ball and he couldn't miss. And I was like, this is cute, but like, I don't think this is like, I don't like what part of this is sustainable. What part of this is what he's going to be on the main roster. You know, it's just like, so, but yeah, I'm fascinated by him, and the same with Malachi Branham. Cause I'm just like, and Branham, I think even more so than Champagne, they have not figured out what his role is or like where he fits. But I don't think they dislike what he does.
Well, let's hold this, Mr. General Manager Zitgraf.
Right, right.
We'll get into this in a second. I wanted to sort of close out on the stuff that I think, and you brought it up a little bit when we were talking about Victor, but like, you can tell a couple of things. You can tell, and first of all, you mentioned like, the reason I want to do this is because we're this exercise after the break is like, we know what the Spurs know what they have, and it mm-hmm. is time to start figuring out where the pieces need to land, because what we're seeing from a guy in Victor Wembanyama right now, who as you can tell, this is a guy who for years has been sort of freelancing, and now mm-hmm. he's still trying to figure out where his spots are. You and I talked about this really briefly before we started recording, that he doesn't have like a go-to move yet. He has a couple right. of stuff, like whenever the Spurs get in trouble, or whenever he sort of resorts to his comfort zone type of stuff, it's off the dribble. It's like spacing out and letting him, you know, go one-on-one at Jokic, which is just such a crazy thing to see, a 7'5", like octopus dribbling back and forth, crossing over, going between his legs, spinning, going up and under and finger rolling. But that doesn't necessarily qualify as like a go-to move when you have a dude up in you have to figure out how to beat him. I think at some point, as he gets stronger and he's able to maintain his base and not get pushed around, he's gonna and not to mention like have guys who can get him, who know how to get him the ball in the right spots, and just mm-hmm. have more familiarity with him. Even the guys this year, man, they're gonna get better at it. Even the guys on the current roster who stick around, like they're going to get better at feeding him the ball. The more they get used to to playing with this guy and like going against all the natural tendencies that they've learned and honed over the courses of their entire lives playing the sport. Like, this dude is just different. He exists in a different dimension, figuratively and literally. And so they're going to get there. But at a certain point, he's going to have to develop go-to moves. And I think that's kind of one of the things you can see him processing right now. Like, okay, what can I do in this situation? What can I do in this situation? When this guy does this, how do I need to react? When, you know, to anything that's going on, whether that's one-on-one, smaller guys on him, bigger guys on him, sending double from the baseline, sending a double from the nail, like whatever the case may be, these defenses are all throwing so many different looks at him that he's never seen before, that he's starting to see a little bit more of. Yeah. And it's just cool watching him process all of this and not just process it, but almost get a freaking quadruple double while processing it at 20 years old.
That was insane against, you know, a team that is so large in Denver that you think would be best suited to like shut him down for, I mean, like I, if you were like, there are, if you were like, name me three teams that you actually think could like force Victor Wembanyama to have an absolutely just bad game.
The last time they played in yeah. Austin, like he had a horrible game. It was one of his best. It was one of his worst games of the season. So yeah, to your point, they're capable of doing that.
And to, so for him to do that, for him to learn so quickly about like, all right, so that didn't work last time, this is what I need to do this time. It does remind me, LaMarcus Aldridge was on All the Smoke, Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson's podcast. And he mentioned, this was a couple of months ago, but he mentioned that like, it's like, he was being complimentary, but he basically was just saying like, he needs like two moves that when all else fails.
Oh yeah. I remember that interview.
He could just do that. Cause he was like, he's so talented that it's almost like that he's trying to do too much. And it, eventually it's like, just find those two moves that like, when you know you need buckets, like you can just go to that. And like, obviously like it, you know, LaMarcus had two moves that,
yeah,
he could go through over and over again, and it was just like when they were going, he was rolling, you know.
Yeah, he had the drop the shoulder into you and lean back, turn around, and then he had the drop the other shoulder into you and do a little hook shot. Like those were his moves.
Man, when that pick and pop was going, it was just pick and pop. Yeah. You could not. And then he was up until like the very end, he was just swift enough that if you started to close out hard on the pick and pop, he, you know, would take that 1-2 dribble and then dunk it. And then he became unable to do that because father time.
Hey, man, there's a reason why that guy scored more than 20,000 points in his career. And, like, I don't know, man, people wonder if he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And I just, like, look at the numbers and I look at the other people who are in the Hall of Fame. And I'm like, I don't know if it's because he was playing in Portland for most of his career and then he's in San Antonio. But that guy was awesome. And and when he came to San Antonio, he became an even better defender. Yep. Like, I don't know. That's neither here nor there, though. For all this talk about Victor Wembanyama, Trevor, after the break, it's going to be on you to put the pieces around him and to take away the pieces that shouldn't be there away from him.
I'm ready.
All right. We'll be back in a second. All right, we are back, and before we turn this thing over to GM Trevor Zitgraff or whatever he's going to call himself, I just want to offer the disclaimer to any Spur or Spurs employee listening to this that Trevor's views do not reflect the views of the host of this podcast, and I look forward to speaking with you all in the near future and continuing to work alongside you. I'm playing around. I thought Trevor was actually pretty perfect for this because you seem to like, whether it's interactions online or whatever comments that I get, you seem to get supporters and detractors from both sides of sort of the Spurs fan base. So you're kind of right there in the middle appealing to your nonpartisan, I guess we'll say.
I appreciate that. I would also add to any Spurs or Spurs employees, I tried not to take myself too serious online, and I think we can count a podcast as online. So I would implore you to also not take me that serious. We're just having fun here. Basketball is fun. Basketball is fun. The goal is to have fun.
So is talking about people's contracts and professional futures.
Yeah. I in no way think that what I say is going to actually impact anybody's money. So
I don't think the way the internet is these days, I don't think anything anyone says impacts the way someone's thought process is working when it's like already dead set. But Trevor, maybe you have some minds to change. We'll see.
Perhaps.
I want to just get these out of the way real quick. And I think we can agree.
Okay.
Victor Wembanyama, you're not trading him for anything. No. Devin Vassell, realistically, is not going to be traded for anything. Contract kicking in. It's not like someone's going to become available or whatever.
I can't even think, like, I don't know, like, Jason Tatum would need to demand a trade. Like, I can't even think of, like, you were talking about, like, the top seven players in the league would have to become available for me.
And when you look at
he would be on the table.
When you look at even, like, let's just throw out there, like, some of the bigger names that might become available via trade if you're the Spurs. And let me just do this with you real quick. Would you trade Devin Vassell for Trae Young?
No.
Would you trade Devin Vassell for Karl Anthony Towns? Let's say if the Wolves are trying to get rid of people. No. Would you trade Devin Vassell for Zach LaVine?
No.
Would you trade him for Donovan Mitchell?
No, but I guess we're getting closer, but no.
Getting closer, but still no. He's on the come up, starting, honestly, like, if he keeps developing, his contract is going to be great, whereas you're paying max money or super max money to these other guys. So we'll just go Victor Wembanyama, obviously not going anywhere. Devin Vassell, not going anywhere. This is me, the assistant general manager, the assistant to the general manager.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So we're going to say, again, I think we've seen enough from Jeremy Sohan this year to say that untouchable, no, but he's probably, like, right there, right below Devin as far as, like, the list of guys who would become available.
Yeah, if it's like the hierarchy. If you had to rank this, sure.
Yeah. I don't think he's going anywhere unless, again, I can't even name the player who I would think, like, okay, that guy's available, you have to go get him. Because, like, in a vacuum, is Jeremy Sohan better than, just because I literally am staring at his name right now on a list on SpotTrack, is he better than Paul George? No. Is he ever going to be better than Paul George, like, his peak? No. But, I don't know. Like, are you trading Paul George for? Are you trading Jeremy? So, like, there's just a lot of reasons that you wouldn't do that.
No, I mean, but isn't that kind of like, if we're gonna go through this exercise, like, I think it's worth asking, like, what's the oldest player you'd trade for, Trevor?
Oldest player. That's a great question. Let's see.
Because to me, like, I don't think you're venturing into even like the low 30s. Like, I don't. By the time the Spurs are ready to roll, like, I don't think you're really entertaining ideas of, especially when it comes to high price guys. Like, if we're talking like, you want to have a player come in who is a veteran, who might be able to patch some holes or whatever in the meantime, fine. But in terms of, like, big money guys who have years left on their contract, whatever it might be, like, you don't want to be dealing with that right now. You want to be, like, reaching your sort of peak in a few years. And, like, if you're talking about a 33-year-old or a 34-year-old, like, you don't want to be hitting your stride when that guy's turning 37 or 38. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right. So I think, like, 28 is probably the oldest I would go. Because here's an example. Again, I'm staring at his name, and it's a similar position. So I think this makes sense. Pascal Siakam is third. I just said his name, like, just Siakam. I hate when, like, there are people on podcast, Jacob Pertl, and it's like, that's not his name. That's not his name. Pascal Siakam is 30 years old now. He's due for, I can't remember, Matt, do you remember, can he get a 5-year or a 4-year contract coming up?
Well, he's traded, so he has the bird rights, so he can get he can get the 5-year under the new CBA, because you don't need to do the full max to get the 5 years. So he could get 5 years.
So I really like Siakam. I do think he would be both now and let's say like the next like 2 or 3 years, he would be an upgrade over Jeremy Sochan. However, I would worry that the last 2 years of that deal, when the Spurs ideally are probably like really kicking into like championship mode, like that's probably not a valid, like a good value proposition as far as like
he's already on the decline at that point.
So if you were telling me
theoretically
27 or 28 year old Pascal Siakam, then, you know, then I think the life of that contract, he is worth his price for the life of that contract. 30 year old Pascal Siakam, when he's going to be 34, 35 when that contract's running up, yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
Right. No, I'm with you. And I'm, when you're, if you're looking to trade Jeremy Sochan, like you're looking probably to fill, and again, theoretically,
yeah,
I don't think he's going anywhere either.
Me either. Yeah.
But it, you know, you're theoretically looking for someone to fill that role, to do some of the stuff that you'd lose with Sochan. Right. And that just doesn't seem like, a spot that you can like realistically upgrade.
No, because it feels like that guy's either going to just cost too much because the ceiling of what you want from Jeremy Sochan is so valuable that it's going to cost you, or it's going to take a while to build that guy up.
Right.
So, like, what's the point? But after that, man, I feel like then it becomes like, if we're just talking about like, would you trade them? Like, I feel like there's a pretty steep drop off after that.
Well, let's kind of, I guess, refine this a little bit. I think that you and I are probably on the same page that Keldon Johnson's contract is fine, like in terms of what he's offering them, even if he's coming in off the bench, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I should say steep drop off is a impolite way of saying that, but I just think as far as like who they're committed to, who are they committed to protecting? But I think what Keldon gives them at the price that he gives them is great. And I get that he's not the perfect player, and probably Spurs fans want more out of him, whether it's more scoring or more of a consistent 3-point threat. But like, I don't know. Keldon Johnson's not the problem to me.
It's not like it's the easiest trade piece. Yeah, the contract is fine. I don't know how much other teams value Keldon Johnson. Mm-hmm. So like in my mind, he's worth more to the Spurs as a leader, a guy who knows his role and is like willing to accept different roles, as evidenced by the fact that he went to the bench and accepted that and sort of maintained his place as a, you know, young veteran presence.
Right.
And I just don't think that he has the same value to other teams, because like realistically, what do you think the Spurs could get in return for Keldon Johnson? Unless you're talking about, or he's not going in a trade unless he's in the deal for a star along with draft picks and maybe another young guy or some other type of filler. But in terms of like being the focal point, that's probably not going to be Keldon Johnson.
I agree. I don't know why you would. Like, there are certain guys that just get put on the market because they do, for whatever reason. I don't think we're at a point where Keldon Johnson's like,
no,
you're just gonna, like, where you're going to like start hearing the rumor, like, oh, I hear Keldon Johnson is being made available. I think for financial reasons and the fact that he's a good basketball player, like, yes, you're right. Like, if the Trae Young rumor reignites, if a Donovan Mitchell rumor ignites, like, it just makes sense that Keldon Johnson would be the guy in that trade, given his salary and, you know, the hierarchy that we're talking about.
Right. You know, that's a whole nother discussion. that I've had. I don't know if we've talked about it on this pod. I know I've talked about it with either you or Bruno or even Tom Petrini for a little while last week. But I just don't see Keldon go anywhere, like we said, because for the most part, like, I don't really see the Spurs trading for another star, like a star.
Right.
I just don't really see it happening. So
I think if he goes, it's because they make the big swing.
Right.
So
I think we can agree on that. And if
so, it's the, like, what, 80% chance he stays? Like, would you, I mean, 85% chance he stays? Like, whatever.
I'd say something in that range. Yeah. I think it's much more likely than not that he's back in San Antonio next year.
Right.
But I think we're on the same page, Mr. GM. Keldon isn't going anywhere unless a star is coming back to San Antonio.
Here's where Brian Wrong would differentiate from Brian Wright, I think.
Okay.
Just because I feel like most GMs, especially rebuilding GMs, are afraid to use that extra draft capital they have to make splashes. If I'm Brian Wrong and not Trevor Zegras, I'm floating that draft capital out there to see, like, who's if I'm trying to get the next star, and just let's Trae Young, Darius Garland, whatever, whoever we're talking about. I'm throwing the picks out there, and then they still have enough space that, like, then it's like Devontae Graham's contract. I think maybe Collins' contract is a little bit harder to move this offseason just because he's got the 2 years left instead of, and it's about to kick in.
And he's had a down year. That's going to be a really tough one to trade.
So, but maybe if you're including draft capital, it's not as problematic. I don't know.
And it's not that bad of a contract. It's just considering the year that he's had, like, at times has been tough. So it's not really that bad. It's like it averages like $17 million annually. Like, that's really not, you can eat that, and it's only 2 years. So, like, you can survive something like that for a guy who I still think, when he gets his crap together, is really useful. So anyway, that's neither here nor there.
So anyways, but yes, I feel like they still have the contract flexibility to go big game hunting without having to include any of the four guys that we've already mentioned in Wemby, Vassell, Sochan, and Keldon Johnson. Because, again, I think especially, like, if Trae Jones is running the show with the second unit, I think a Keldon Trae led second unit is actually, like, really good.
You mentioned Trae. Let's move on to Trae. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as long as he's willing to continue playing for like $10 million, $12
million,
maybe even a little bit more than that on an annual basis. Like, that right now, he's basically playing at the mid-level exception.
Yeah.
If he's willing to keep playing for that kind of money, which I don't know if he will, he keeps getting better. He may earn himself more money down the line, but, like, if you can keep that guy on your team, you do it as long as you possibly can, because he is really, really valuable right now.
Yes, keeps getting nominated for Community Assist Awards, keeps getting nominated for Teammate Awards. I, for some reason, get those two mixed up in my head, probably just because they're, like, to me, they're like the "this person's a really good person" awards.
The Good Dude Awards.
The Good Dude Awards. But yeah, it just seems like, I mean, everyone just seems to really appreciate what he brings to the team on and off the court. And his three-pointer, at least his catch-and-shoot numbers, are way up.
Yeah, so that's another one, man. And I tweeted it out the other night during the Denver game. Like, since the All-Star break, and I don't have the all the way up-to-date number in front of me, but since the All-Star break, he's shooting better than 50% on threes on, like, 2.5 attempts per game. Like, that's not crazy volume, but that's decent volume. That's, like, spot up. You're open all the time. You have Wemby looking for outlets. Like, he even hit a pull-up three the other night because they just totally left him on the perimeter. Man, I don't know what to make of it. And we can kind of fast forward through a little bit through some of these names, because this is a question that I have for you at the very end of this, as we go through the roster. But his shot looks good, man. There's arc to it. The form is nice. The mechanics look good. It's slow. It's a little bit slow in terms of getting rid of it, but it looks good. If he's playing like this and if he can space the floor the way he has been of late, like that's a, it's obvious that that's a dude who takes care of the ball, knows how to get the ball to his teammates in their spots, has become a much better finisher at the rim. The mid-range stuff and the floater is starting to go down again. I don't know. He's small and he's a liability on defense, even though he works his butt off on that end of the floor. There's not much you can do about that. But just in general, like this dude is going to be an NBA player for a really long time.
Yeah. I think we've both seen with like how the Spurs have progressed through this season and then also just other teams who have like maybe not the most dynamic point guards, but it's still very valuable to have a steady hand when you need, like, even if it's not at the end of the game, but just throughout the game when you just need to kind of get things in order. She's good guys to have around. And so you're right. As long as the money doesn't get too crazy, I don't know why you wouldn't want to keep him around.
So next up, we've already talked a little bit about Julian Champagne, but just to get around to this portion of the conversation, he's on this, you know, non-guaranteed contract. I mean, at this point, you hang on to him until there's some offer that might come through or you need the space for somebody else or whatever the case might be, right?
Right.
Because that would be where I stand.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I could also see that he's another guy that like a team could be like, if you were talking trade, they'd be like, hey, you know who we'd actually like? We'd like that guy. And he's,
yeah, like
he's,
this is know, a, he's a such promising a, young
he would
player.
Be such a cheap throw-in. Yeah, he'd be such a cheap throw-in that it's like you don't even need to like make salaries work or anything like that. So, but yeah, again, like it's not like a guy you're immediately looking to upgrade over. Well, you know what? Maybe I prefer him as like the first or second guy off the bench as opposed to in the starting lineup. Maybe I want someone who's a little bit more polished in the starting lineup. So I'm not looking to get rid of Julian Champagne. I'm looking to have him be the guy who improves your depth. So like I think I said this last time, I always get the Martins confused. Caleb Martin. I would really love Caleb Martin on this team. From the Heat.
Yeah. I mean, he's another very solid player. I think just like in general. Oh, hey, by the way, another twin, just like Julian.
Another twin. That's right. That's right.
But I think when you hear people talk about, oh, my God, they need to make big wholesale changes on this roster. Well, no, because like you don't want to just lose assets. So you like, sure. There may, over the next couple of years, there may be turnover, but a lot of it, not maybe not even a lot of it, but a portion of it is going to come out of trades, because you don't want to just lose assets that you have and just go scrounging through free agency to pick guys up, because you're not going to have enough money to do that anyway, by the way, because too many of these guys are on really cheap deals for the Spurs and they're not they're not going to open up like bukus of cap space. But you just want to have, you want to keep these pieces around, not just to maintain the continuity, but to have assets for, you know, the potential of future trades. So in a lot of these scenarios on the roster, when you're looking at it, it's like, well, no, let's not just cut bait on anyone too soon. Like we can always open a roster spot, right?
Right. No, I'm with you. I feel like, you know, and this has been in out there in the like, the Hoop Collective's talked about it. A bunch of other podcasts talked about it. Like, Spurs need to make upgrades now. And I agree, they do need to make upgrades. But I don't think that means that you have to do, like, just get rid of wide swaths of the current roster. I think I think there are members of this roster that can be here. They're just going to be role players instead of, you know, they might have reduced roles than what they have now. And that's fine. Like, I don't know why that's a bad thing.
Well, and let's real quick, like, you brought up Malachi Branham earlier. I think he fits the same description. He's going to be around. If he becomes an asset that a team might want in something later on down the road, great. If he becomes a really nice scoring sixth man, and if he can figure out how to play at home the way he plays on the road. Did you see what I put out there the other night? That he's shooting 40% from three on the road and 26% from three at home.
Make
sense of that for me,
make
Trevor.
Sense of it. yes, I would say that in the imaginary trade for start B, you know, Keldon and Malachi are probably the two most likely guys to go out because of contract slash production, you know,
production like, upside, that right. kind of thing.
Like those, like just in my mind, like those are the two guys that go out, not because you're trying to get rid of them, but because other teams will find value in them.
Also, like, forget about the idea of like the Spurs, unless just again, then this is sort of a caveat for all of this. Unless something crazy comes along, they're not just going to go releasing a bunch of guys. The same right. goes for Blake Wesley. Like, you never see dudes, you know, on rookie scale contracts let go unless mm-hmm. you're a team that's in like the luxury tax or something like that, and you want to shed some salary. But like the mm-hmm. Spurs aren't in that situation. So Malachi Branham, he's going to be around unless a team wants him or it needs to be filler in a trade. Like, he's going to be around and we'll see how he develops. Same with Blake Wesley, right?
Yep.
So
Blake Wesley's another guy who would benefit from Zach Collins' three-pointer coming back at volume, because then the paint's just open for him to just, you know, I want Malachi, or sorry, I want Blake Wesley, you know, coming off a screen or just coming off of some sort of action, attacking the basket.
And I mean, that's another dude who needs to get the 3-point shot off, or up, I should say, like, yeah. because if he does have any semblance, if he develops any semblance of a consistent three, like, his burst off the dribble is going to be that much more dangerous, going to open up a lot of space. Yep. Blake has made a lot of progress this year. Game has slowed down a lot for him, but the facilitating out of the pick and roll needs to improve, even though he's done a really good job of, like, instead of, there are a lot of times where he gets toward the rim, but if he's surrounded by the trees, he's doing a really good job of not forcing it at the rim, taking yep. his time, looking for the kick out, looking for the skip pass, whatever it might be. He's been so much better at that this season. So we're starting to, we've seen development from him this year. Just need to see it continue. I don't think he's really necessarily a trade target for anybody. I think his defense is obviously, I'm sure, taken, people have taken notice of. Yep. But other than that, he's just still, very much a work in progress.
He would be a guy that I could see you trading for an extra pick in a draft, but the Spurs do not have a need for extra picks in any of like the next like three or four drafts.
It's going to be funny, man. It's going to be one of these situations where, like, if, and we, cause we've seen the Thunder do this here in recent years, and they've had, you know, they have a million picks. Like, when you get to a point where your roster's too crowded, you can't make all these picks. So you right. keep sort of pushing them down the road and spreading them out a little bit.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see how the Spurs use their picks that they have coming up over the next, not just this summer, which is looking more and more like it's likely to be only their own pick, but it really, it'll be like a coin flip with the Raptors. Cause even if they're inside the top six, it's going to be like six.
Then it's potentially four first rounders next year.
Potentially five, dude. Potentially five.
Yeah, you're right.
If it's the Spurs, Raptors, Bulls, Hawks, and then can the Hornets make the playoffs? The
right, I forgot about the Hornets.
Can Brandon Miller and LaMelo Ball stay healthy and make the playoffs? Still, I'll just feel like that one's a long shot. but okay. Then there are these other guys. Zach Collins, we've already talked about. He's not going anywhere. I mean, realistically. Unless, again, trade filler is needed. There are picks involved, all this sort of stuff.
I think we've learned that Zach Collins is a perfectly good backup. And if teams attack him more than they attack Wemby, it's not because Zach Collins is a bad rim defender. It's because teams are going to be like, oh, thank God, Wemby's off the court. We can just run our normal stuff.
They go right at him, man.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help that a lot of the defense with that second unit on the perimeter is rough. It's like everyone has a runway just to go, you know, sprint directly at Collins. But the other thing that we have to talk about with the roster, Charles Bassey, who tore his ACL, and he has this 4-year contract. All years are non-guaranteed, but no other Spur, or the Spurs were better on defense with him on the floor than they were with any other player this season, including Victor Wembanyama. pretty crazy, but over the course of the season, their defensive rating when Charles Bassey was on the floor was under 100. It was like 99 something.
That's crazy.
It really is crazy. So, like, they probably want to see what, like, especially considering his contract, like, they got to keep giving him a look, right? And just see if this dude can stay healthy.
I think you take him in the camp next year and see what it looks like and make a decision from there.
Yeah. Agreed. I think that's a pretty easy one. But I also sort of think that, I mean, obviously, once Bassey went out, like, Zach was secured to that backup center role. No one else could really play it. So he had to alternate with Wemby. But I still think, and I'm not necessarily saying like starting lineup, but I still think that the Wemby Zach Collins thing in the front court could work together. They have the requisite spacing around it. And then obviously, like I said, like Collins is three has to come back and has to be a weapon.
Right.
But I still believe, like, in theory, that lineup could work. So we'll see. The one unrestricted free agent on the team is Jetty Osman. He is very Spursy. Popovich loves him. He's kind of everything that this organization has sort of valued in a player, at least from like a cultural fit perspective. He's certainly not the most talented, the most athletic, all of these things, but he does a little bit of everything, and that kind of stuff is valuable. Is he someone that, if you're looking for something within the mid-level exception, would you bring him back, or just what would your strategy be, Mr. Wrong?
Mr. Wrong would look to upgrade, but also be open to, like, if they could. I mean, I don't know. It's just hard to find minutes for all the wings they have to go around. I think I would look to upgrade, but I also wouldn't be upset if he came back. First, I would look to upgrade, though.
And this is sort of where things get complicated, because you talk about the space and you talk about, like, you have to bring some guys back. I'm willing to bet that Devontae Graham is going to be gone, even though they love the dude as a person, as a leader, as a locker room guy. He has like 2.5. He has one more year left after this. It's partially guaranteed at like $2.5 million.
Right.
If they pay him that money and set him free, that opens up a spot. They have guys like CD Sissoko coming up. They have at least one draft pick that's going to be a high draft pick coming into the league. Whether they're good enough to be playing right away is another story, but they have young dudes that need to play. And when you look at the big picture, and it almost reminds me of last year with Kata Bates-Diop, where it's like, oh, this guy's a good fit. Like, he does a little bit of everything. We can kind of plug him and play him in multiple places. But is it the right move for him? Is it the right move for us? If I'm the Spurs talking, is it the right move for us?
Right.
So is it even worth bringing Jetty back in the long term, in the bigger picture of things, when, like, you know that you have picks coming in, you have young guys that need to play? Again, and here's another one, Dom Barlow. He's a restricted free agent. Like, who do you prioritize there?
Yeah.
Barlow or Osman? I feel like the answer is pretty obvious with that one, especially considering the way Barlow has improved this season, right?
Also, Barlow Bassey might become a one or the other.
It could be. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Bassey Barlow could be a one or the other.
Yeah.
Bassey Barlow Mamu could be one or the other, or the other.
Yeah,
or I think two out of three, or one out of three of those guys.
Be interesting to see if Barlow can develop any sort of, even just a catch and shoot three, because I feel
there are glimpses of it.
Yeah, I feel like he's just too small to be even a full time backup five. But, you know, just unless you had a absolute knockdown five, you can't really put him at the four anywhere. Maybe with Wemby, but I don't know that you want to do that, because you want the floor as open as possible for Wemby. So, yeah, Barlow's interesting. I'm sure they like him. They keep giving him opportunities, but I don't know. At some point, you just got to make tough decisions.
Well, look, man, that is your job. Let me put this out there in front of you real quick. We've talked it through. I feel like we've had a good coworker dynamic here.
Yeah.
But we're going to go through Osman. Bassey, I think you've already sort of given your answer on Bassey. You want him in camp.
It's just so cheap. Like, what? Like, yeah. What's the harm?
Right. So between Osman, Mamu, we didn't really talk about Mamu. Big time energy guy, mm-hmm. inconsistent. Another dude that they love, but like, is he going to be able to play defense? He's another dude who's not big enough to play the five. He's not quick enough to play the four defensively. Gets right. in trouble, even though he works hard like all these guys do. But I don't know. Where are you on Mamu? Like, we're talking about, you know, roster spots are at a premium at this point.
Chetty and Mamu and Don Barlow, actually. I would put all three of them in the... I would like to have them back, but I need to see if I can upgrade the roster first.
Oh, okay. Because, even Barlow.
Because you gotta, like, at this point, if I'm like, yeah, they're probably coming back. Like, then you're just the same team as last year. And look, we thought there was going to be enough internal improvement for there to be a big uptick in wins this year, and there hasn't been. They're going to finish roughly with the same record as last year. This team has to start improving, and I understand that there will be some internal development, but you also gotta... Even if it's on the fringes, you got to improve on the fringes. And so I got to have some flexibility, some roster flexibility somewhere. And so if those are three spots that I got to open up to bring in guys to improve this roster, that's what I'm doing.
Sir, I'm obviously going to, you know, this is your show to run, and I will stay on the same page as you with Jetty and Mamu. And I think both of us.
Sorry, I forgot about
Devontae. And Devontae, but I would probably pump the brakes a little bit on Don Barlow. I think it's a little bit too early to let him get away. And who knows what sort of big loss it would be. But I do think that at 20 years old, we've seen a pretty sizable difference in both his physique, his stature. Athleticism. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of good stuff defensively. We've seen some, certainly seen some upticks with the stuff he has on offense. Right. I think it would be wise to keep going with him.
He's
sir,
closer,
with all due respect.
Sure. He's closer to the top of, like, I would rather bring him back than not.
So he's a you'll sleep on a guy.
He's, if we're ranking those four guys as far as like, we should probably bring this guy back, he's at the top of we should probably bring this guy back. And then I don't feel like ranking the other guys, but yes, your point is noted. We should try to bring Don Barlow back, but we also should not, we shouldn't be beholden to him.
Okay. Understood. But I think at the end of this, we're looking at three definite cuts. Is that accurate?
Sure.
So the San Antonio Spurs heading into the NBA draft with 12 players returning, at least, at most, I should say,
so
with some flexibility for more.
Right.
12 at most with flexibility for more.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. I want to improve my perimeter defense.
Okay.
I feel like I need to go outside. Outside the organization to do that.
I think you might be right, sir.
And I want to improve the primary ball handling. And I also think I probably have to go outside the organization to do that, unless Blake Wesley. But I don't want to give up on Blake Wesley's primary ball handling abilities.
Okay. Okay.
Those are my priorities. And the shooting. But hopefully... If you're improving the defense, you're also finding someone who can improve your shooting. Hopefully you can get both.
Right. And I think also, like, I think shooting is like, let me real quick. And I'm glad you actually brought that up, because I did have a real quick sort. I wanted to go over a few names with you. This is free agency. Mm-hmm. Bruce Brown Jr. has a club option of $23 million. He has not been very good in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance he's a free agent. Is that someone you would look at, even though he's had a down year, hasn't shot the ball well? Is that someone you would look at?
Yes, because I've seen what he can do in with that Denver team that had, you know, a unicorn who had some vision and could do some stuff, and another guy who, in Aaron Gordon, who maybe playmaking is not his primary attribute, but it is a good attribute, much like Jeremy Sohan. And yes, so I would still look at him for sure.
Okay, what about his teammate Gary Trent Jr.?
How much is he going to cost?
Yeah, you know, he's making $17 million this year. I don't know I don't know if he's like played himself into a bigger contract than that, but it's not going to be a small one.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Good shooter, but like what else?
Right.
Yeah.
At least Bruce Brown, I know I'm getting some secondary ball handling and some defense to go along with some theoretical good shooting.
What about Markelle Fultz?
No,
it's a no for me. He can't shoot.
I was just thinking, like, because he's not going to be the starting point guard. And as much as I'm a believer in Trey's shooting development, I still think I want more dynamic shooting in the starting.
Okay, what about Tyus Jones?
Oh, I'm all about a Jones brother
reunion.
Reunion. I do think he's a better shooter than his brother. And so
we'll see for how long.
But if you could figure out a way to split their minutes up to where no one's feelings get hurt, which I feel like they probably, I don't know, maybe they would, their feelings wouldn't get hurt at all. But like,
they're brothers, man. Yeah.
I'm a Tyus Jones. I'm a Jones brother optimist.
Yeah. They're both cool players. It'd be enjoyable to watch them on the same team. What about if we're kind of continuing down the point guard rabbit hole? Minnesota is not going to be able to pay everybody. Monte Morris is an unrestricted free agent.
You know, because you're probably getting less than mid level for him, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I would say at most mid level. He's probably played himself into at least a mid level, but probably in that area.
I don't love having 2 6-foot tall point guards, but I'm not opposed to it either.
Well, this is also one of those things where it's like you're just going to start adding people that can like help bridge gaps, patch together a roster, be more competitive, like veteran type dudes. And to be fair, I don't really know anything about the personalities of some of these guys. So if I took a deeper look and talk to some people, I could probably be like, I don't know about all that.
I feel like we could assume Tyus Jones also a good dude.
Oh, yeah. No, Tyus, we know. Caleb Martin has a player option for $7.1 million. I feel like he's going to decline that.
You know, if you can get that guy for the mid-level or a little bit more, like a 2 or 3 year deal on the mid-level or a little bit more.
Right.
Beefs up your defense. And again, I guess the shooting's more hot and cold. But
he can get hot.
But then Champagne becomes your backup wing, and he's giant and pretty good on defense. And I don't know. I like the structure of the team we're starting to build if you do that.
All right. Well, I think that we could probably do this for forever, but this was, I feel, a pretty good run through the roster. I feel like there are going to be people who listen to this to say 12 people coming back. I'll say 12 people at most. And of those 12 people, and I think this is, again, one of the important things to realize is, like, when I say 12 people coming back, I include in that potential the idea that one or more of them could be used as a trade asset. So,
yeah.
I think just in general, that would be a decent way to head into the NBA draft with free agency approaching. You can have, even if you bring, a couple of these dudes back who have these partially guaranteed deals, you could deal with that stuff later, get rid of them if you need to. There's always that potential. So I think we did a good job, man. And I know you got to go. So anything you want to tell the people, anything you want to get off your chest, any other message you would like Brian Wrong to inform his constituents of? I guess they're not really his constituents, but you know.
No, this is fun. This is always fun. And again, we want it to be fun. We're not trying to mess with anyone's money. No one takes us serious enough for that. And so I just look forward to
it. Unfortunately, it's true.
believe it or not, I look forward to the discourse on this.
Sweet.
Because I always want to be open-minded about this roster.
All right. Please subscribe, rate, review if you haven't. It's been a good time, Trevor. I will talk to you next time, all right?
Have fun, everybody.
This has been Small Market Bias, presented by BetOnline and part of the Believe Network. We'll see y'all next week. Dive right in.